Hello, and welcome to another episode of Little Fish. This is the bonus Monday episode where we put down our favorite facts from the last 7 days and we go through your favorite facts. So we have gone through the inbox. Andy has picked out some of the best, and I am now going to sit here with Anna Tuschinski and James Harkin and go through them. So who wants to start?
Go on, Anna.
Well, thank you. I'm going to start with this one from John Cornell. Sorry, I said that with an American accent. I don't know if he's American. That's just because of the university. From John Cornell. Is that?
Yes. Yeah, of course that was better.
He might be a Cockney Barrow boy. We don't know.
Exactly. Equally likely. And he said, I love this fact, actually. Just came across this fact about the Huli people of the Hela province in Papua New Guinea. And it is that the young boys of the Huli tribe aren't considered real men until they've attended Whig school. This is, and he says, and made either an ordinary or a ceremonial wig. And then he specifies, I'm not a real man, sadly. And that's okay. No judgment about not making a wig. Are you guys real men?
I've never made a wig.
Well, there you go.
I don't think I've made a wig. No.
You would remember, I think.
I don't know. My parents are hairdressers. I feel like I helped them in a lot of stuff as a kid.
I can imagine baby Dan sort of crawling around, picking up all the discarded bits of hair from all the customers.
Exactly.
And weaving them into a little toupee in the corner.
Presenting them to the customers when my parents are looking away and they never come back. And yeah, it's. I'm sure that was a childhood thing.
Yeah. That's cool. Funny old childhood you have. In the source that I read, I think you guys might be men, because it actually said that the oldest known tradition is where the boys learn the fundamentals of the Huli tradition, which is how to grow their hair to make into wigs. And actually, I think it's more about how to grow your hair in a wig-like manner.
I see.
That's interesting, because what would turn your hair into a wig-like shape is constant haircuts so that it grew as part of a shape. You can't make one bit grow longer and the other just by thinking it.
Well, right? You can, I think, according to maybe the Huli people. Oh, that's the thing, Dan. You're making a judgment based on your own beliefs. Yeah. And I think these people would say they believe that if you do think it, and if you have the wig master who runs the school really think it, he's got the powers to make your hair grow.
I would argue, actually, that Dan was making a judgment based on physiology of human beings rather than his own beliefs.
Well, that's just your opinion, James. The physiology of human beings is an existing factual thing. Anyway...
Have you actually been away at debate club for the last 9 months?
I've been at wig school, and I hoped you'd notice I'd been thinking my hair into being longer.
There is a group of people in Peru. I think it's the guys on the lake, on Lake Titicaca, but it might not be those guys. But anyway, to become a man, you need to knit a bobble hat that is solid enough that you can carry water in it. And once you've done that, you go through. Because these are all rites of passage, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Why do bobble hats have to be so solid around Lake Titicaca?
Well, I don't know why
their heads a lot?
Yeah, I don't know, really. I've worn one of those bobble hats, the Lake Titicaca ones, when I went to Lake Titicaca. Yeah, it's nice to say Titicaca.
I know. It's the only reason you raised this fact, I think, is so you get to say it.
But yeah, I got one of these hats, and they're like just woolen hats with bubbles on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. But yeah, it's just part of the culture that you just have to learn how to do this, and until you do it, you can't grow up. And there's quite a lot of places that do things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny, because bubbles, I think when you say bubble hat, where would you say the bubble has to be?
On the top, of course.
On the top.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with that.
Yeah, but they believe it's on the side. Don't mess with their beliefs.
Very insulting.
Okay. Okay, here is a fact from Charles Ekman. And it's a bit of a complicated one, so we'll see if I can explain it. Well, I might not be able to. But Charles says, there is no such thing as a random number generator, because there is no such thing as a random number.
I see. Oh, okay.
Okay.
So basically he's saying that randomness is not a property that a number can have.
Mm.
If you roll a dice and you get a number 4, you have managed to generate that in a random manner, but the number itself is not random. The number is just the number 4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what he's saying then is that you can have a random number generator, but not a random number generator.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, what would a random generator be, though? Surely anything.
The generator is the dice, which generates random number. So you can have a random number generator. So the number generator is the dice, which gives you the randomness. But you can't have a random number generator, because randomness is not an adjective that you could put next to number. Mathematics.
No, absolutely. I can see how you can have a random generator as well. And actually, you can only use it as an adverb. Maybe you shouldn't be allowed to use random as an adjective at all. You just generate numbers randomly.
Well, if you're a magician, you say pick a random card. That is a generator, the card system of which you're picking, right?
It's a random generator.
Yeah.
Something that's doing it randomly.
But the numbers will never be the random thing. I'm just trying to work out when you would ever use this email in real life context. and it does feel like it's been used
by
this person.
I don't think so, really. I think it's just a bit of pedantic mathematical stuff.
Yeah.
I think if the bar is when you're going to use stuff in a real life context, I think our podcast is completely dead. So let's not go down that avenue.
The word random used to mean to run somewhere very fast and very ferociously. Uh-huh. And then they had lots of different meanings. But in the 16th century, if you were on a ship and you were firing like a cannonball, a random firing would be the way that you would fire it to go the furthest. So that would be 45 degrees, basically. So if it said ever said fire in a random direction and you're on a 16th century vessel, you mustn't fire it in any direction. You must have fired it exactly 45 degrees.
Oh, this is why time travelers get in such trouble, don't they? They make very bad naval officers.
All right, let's get on to another one. This one comes from Mike Gray from Radium Hot Springs in British Columbia, Canada. Accent does not work. Anyway, Mike Gray says, I am the mayor of Radium Hot Springs in British Columbia. Ooh. Yeah, and I thought our town might have a little fact for Little Fish. The village is named after the nearby hot springs, which were renamed in 1915 after scientists discovered trace amounts of radon, a radioactive gas, in the water. The levels are completely safe, but it does mean our town is now named after what is technically a mildly radioactive spa.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know why they chucked the radium in, because Hot Springs is a town that I'd go to.
Yes.
Radium Hot Springs, I'm not taking my clothes off.
This is very cool, because we've had lords write in. I don't think we've ever had any mayors from Canada write in before. This might be our first one.
It's our first. I think that's really cool. And I think also it's really cool. If it's cool enough to be the mayor of somewhere, but to be the mayor of somewhere that has such a cool name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well done.
That's a hell of a badge.
It is really cool. And I went to their Wikipedia page and they have 1,339 residents there as of the 2021 census.
We wrote a book called 1339 Facts.
Exactly. So if you're listening and you're from Radium Hot Springs, you could assign a fact from that book to every single one of the members of your
area.
Cool. Wouldn't that be cool?
And every time a baby's born, you have to kill an old person.
Yes, it has to be a swap.
Yeah, exactly. Pass the facts
on. Yeah, yeah.
Andy sends round the facts that he's curated from the inbox, doesn't he? He sends them to us, and he sent this one. This is from Gary Randall.
So he thinks that this is specifically good for you. Just before you read it out.
Not necessarily for me. You'll see why I've dragged Andy into this, though. So this fact is that Avril is a French name that means April, which we know. And Levine is a French surname, which actually means the fool, because it comes from a name that means someone living near a playhouse or an occupational name for a jester. So that's Levine. So Avril Levine is actually April Fool.
Oh,
that's very nice. Good.
But wait, Andy, I looked into it.
Oh,
it's not true. He's having you on, Andy. It's an April Fool in a fact about April Fool.
Brilliant. What?
And Andy has Levine doesn't mean the fool. Levine just means the veen.
The fool be la fou.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it could have been a ye olde thing, but it's not. Someone's made up a clever trick.
So who sent that in?
Someone called Gary Randall, who I believe is either Gary Randall's been tricked or Andrew Hunter Murray's been tricked. But let the record show that I haven't been tricked.
Good to have you back. I wonder when it was sent, if it was sent at the beginning of April, I wonder what day it hit the inbox.
I had a look in the inbox and it's not there. So I think Andy might have a secret channel, because this isn't in our main inbox.
Right.
Do you think Andy's done this to trick us? He could be the tricker.
Oh my God, Andy is Gary Randall.
Is it an anagram?
Wow, Andy.
It's got And in it.
Yeah, it's got Rand.
It's got Andy in it.
It does.
Andy Girl.
Girl. Andy Girl. It's Andy Girl.
Yeah. Because we know he loves Avril Lavigne.
Like, do we?
Yeah, he was a boy She was an Andy girl. Can I make it any more obvious?
Jesus. Okay.
That is very interesting, actually.
Great stuff.
Do you remember Andy fell for a April Fool's trick on this very show? Not on this show, on our main show.
Oh, yeah.
Which was the elephants inventing the road system in the south of England.
Yes. Yeah. That was good, wasn't it? What was the claim that they trampled the grass down or something? Yeah, that
all of the roads in the south of England are based on old animal tracks made by elephants.
Oh, can we lay into Andy some more? What other shit have we got about
him? If he was planning to fool us, this has very much backfired, hasn't it?
Okay, well, that was a bad prediction by him he did that. And here is another fact about a bad prediction from Matt Birch. And he has found the worst prediction ever made by scientists. And that is that the calculation for the energy density of a vacuum, because their prediction exceeded the observed value by about 120 orders of magnitude. An order of magnitude would be 10 times more. Two orders of magnitude, 100 times more. This was 120 orders of magnitude. They got it wrong. And the difference is so big, according to Matt, that if you said the universe contains one atom, you would be about 40 orders of magnitude out with that, because there's 1 to the power of 40.
And this was 120, did you say?
Yeah, yeah. So that's 3 times worse than you saying there's only one atom in the universe.
Ouch, ouch. We've all made mistakes, yeah. Come on.
I've got another mistake here. This is from 1992, from the president of Sri Lanka, who was called Ranasinghe Premadasa. And he spoke to soothsayers who said that by changing the country's name to Sri Lanka instead of Sri Lanka, he would improve the country's fortune. So he did that, and he was assassinated the following year, and the former spelling was restored.
But did the country's fortune improve? I mean, that's his fault. It didn't say anything about improving his fortune.
That's true. That's the thing with these soothsayers.
Yeah.
They always tell you the truth, but you think that they're not telling you the truth.
Yeah. You've got to read the small print.
Always, the with soothsayer. A soothsayer.
Yeah.
Well, while we're on names of places, here's an email that we got from David Croy, who says, "Today I learned that North, South Carolina, is in the center of the state. Why? Because it's named after John North."
Jesus.
Put it in the book.
Great.
It says.
The bit where it says put it in the book, was that Andy adding a little comment?
It's different font, yeah. So that's weird. Yeah, this was named after a guy called John North, who in 1891 was part of the Southbound Railroad that came through the area. He was an assistant on that. And then he donated 100 acres to the area, and then it got named after him, and he also became the very first elected mayor of North, South Carolina.
Very cool.
Yeah. Nice.
A very mayor-centric episode we've got today. And actually, I've got a related fact that I got sent from Lucy Frey.
Oh, yeah.
And this is that in my town, she says, in my town of Los Alamos, New Mexico, there's a pond downtown named Ashley Pond. And it is named after Ashley Pond.
As in the surname is Pond?
Yeah, her surname is Pond, yeah. But the pond is called Pond.
What is Andy doing? He's not even here.
He's not here. What are we doing? Why did I read my one out that led into your one?
Samuel Donaldson of Christchurch, New Zealand writes, "One of the few tall buildings still in Christchurch after the earthquake is the Height Building. Named after James Height." Officially the Puaka James Height Building. Puaka being Maori for the Rigel Star Cluster.
Really good.
Okay.
What is he doing?
This guy is taking us on a ride. This is bullshit. Check this one out. This is from Jem Condliffe. "This is etymology rather than a fact, but I think it's also a brand new fact," says Jem.
Oh, that's nice. We always like those.
Yeah. "You know when you have an amorous moment, people might say, Andy got off with Dan's sister."
What?
That's what it says.
This is Andy's weird way of telling you this under the pseudonym. Wow. So go on, what's the rest of the fact?
Why is he saying that?
Why is Andy seeing an email like that and sending that to me? Okay, he says, "Why do we say get off with? I believe I can explain." So Jem says, "I work for a local newspaper, and in our archives from 100 years ago, we had paternity cases where a man would have to pay for his illegitimate child's upkeep. The court would possibly hear that 9 months before the baby's arrival, the couple went to a dance in a nearby town, riding on a cart chartered for this purpose. On the way home, beer and lust would take over, and said couple would prevail upon the carter to let them off at a secluded spot. So the idea to get off with is get off the cart. Yeah. And that literally is.
I mean, it's definitely true.
That's the connection that Jem is making. I agree. It's not very strong. And I think Andy only included it so that he could put the image of him making out with my sister into my mind.
Andy, you've been seen, mate. We've got time for one more, Anna.
One from Martha King. Says, this is the funniest fact she's found out recently. Get ready. Hold on to your britches. In the first two original Thomas the Tank Engine books, the Fat Controller was called the Fat Director. It's not the end of the fact. The reason was that after the first two episodes, or the first two editions, the railways were nationalised and the bureaucracy was rejigged, and director became controller. So that's why his name was changed from director to controller.
He's called Mr. Topham Hatt now, because you're not allowed to say Fat Controller anymore.
Yeah.
I will say that I preemptively looked this up because I read a lot of Thomas the Tank Engine, which, by the way, is so full of weird old railway jargon that it's very hard to read to a young toddler. But I knew my mum was going to come along and say, isn't it ridiculous you're not allowed to call him that anymore? So I Googled it to check, and it's not true.
What?
You're totally allowed to call him that. He just happens to have been called Mr. Topham Hatt in some American editions, I think. But like modern editions happily call him the Fat Controller.
Right? Really?
Yeah, there was never a thing.
They did a whole bit of that on SNL last week.
Well, they're incorrect, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Who knew that SNL was not a very rigorously researched, academic, fact-based show?
Do you guys remember that we happen to know one of the Sir Topham Hatts out there, one of the Fat Controllers?
Oh, something's ringing a bell, but yeah. I can't remember what it is.
So you know when if a kid writes in to somewhere that has a fictional character, sometimes someone is assigned to be the official person and they'll write back or they'll do certain things for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know a former one, which was Craig Glenday, the current editor-in-chief of the Guinness World Records. Yeah.
Wait, so what did he do? He wrote in as a kid to Thomas the Tank Engine and said, can I be the Fat Controller?
No.
I misunderstood this.
Quite the opposite, in fact. Think about the exact opposite of what you've just said, and that's true.
Thomas the Tank Engine wrote to Craig Glenday saying,
warmer.
Can I be the Guinness World Records book? Sorry. Look, feel free to explain off air. Yeah. I'm sure the listeners got it.
So the kids would write to the Fat Controller and Craig would reply.
I see.
As
the rotund manager. Cool. That's really cool.
Makes more sense that way, doesn't it?
It does make more sense. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's it for your facts for today. But before we wrap up the show, we have to dish out some headline facts to our latest custodians. So if you join Clubfish, our secret members club, and you join the highest tier friend of the podcast, you will become the custodian of one of the headline facts from our 12 years of doing Fish. And so here are 8 more custodians to hand out now. James, do you want to start?
Yes, this one is now under the custodianship of Krista Hill. And Krista, your fact is that Finland's parliament sometimes makes decisions in the sauna.
Sauna.
Yeah, that's, I mean, playing up to national stereotypes, as usual.
How big is this sauna? Like, how big is their parliament? Isn't it hundreds?
Oh, 100, as in like 650 like we have in our
parliament. Yeah.
We have a very bloated government. We'd need a massive sauna in the UK, wouldn't we?
Yeah,
I bet they're very slimmed down, the Finnish people. I bet they've only got sort of 4 people in their parliament.
Right. I don't know how many they have, but what would be the British equivalent? Like, making all your decisions in Wetherspoons?
yeah.
They might be better ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worth a try, kid.
In a calf, yeah, with a full English.
In a calf.
Yeah. very cool. And saunas are there. I mean, when we did this fact, I think we found out that during war times, you know, generals would bring their own portable sauna as well. Yeah. A lot, like, it's huge in the culture.
It is. It's absolutely massive. You can't go anywhere in Finland without seeing a sauna.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
You've been, haven't you, James?
To Finland, yeah, for sure.
Did you have a sauna?
Did I have a sauna when I was in Finland? I feel like I must have done. I reckon when we did this fact, however many years ago it was, I'd never had a sauna in my life. Mm-hmm. But certainly now I have had saunas.
Yeah.
You've changed, man.
I know. Just slightly warmer than I was all those years ago. Okay, let's do another one.
Okay, well, this is for Mike Smith. Here you are, Mike Smith. You have to guard this fact with your life. In British electoral history, 8 candidates have won no votes at all in a general election. There you go. 8 candidates, Mike Smith. I want you to guard that, memorize their names.
Wasn't one of them someone who, in fact, maybe more than one of them were people who lived in that constituency and didn't even vote for themselves?
Oh,
yes, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's ringing a bell. That's
happened.
That's politeness, isn't it? It's like, you know, because on the off chance someone recognises your handwriting or how you do a cross and they're like, oh my God, they voted for themselves. How embarrassing.
I think like if I was playing like games at Christmas time or something and you had to vote for someone, mm-hmm. I would naturally not vote for myself. Like in some kind of voting game, you wouldn't vote for yourself. You'd always vote for someone else because feels a bit icky to vote for yourself.
Yeah. What kind of games are you playing at Christmas time? Weird democracy games.
We play like a parliamentary game where we each take one of the members of World War II and then we make our arguments about why or why not the war should occur.
Right.
Oh, wow.
You don't do that?
But consequently, James is Prime Minister in the Harkin household. And...
Are you kidding me? You've met all of my family.
Yeah.
How far up the pecking order do you think I am in that family?
No, that's true. Yeah. Okay, let's get another one here. This fact is going out to Gergo de Brexeni.
Okay.
And the fact is, the final McDonald's burger ever sold in Iceland can be watched decomposing on a webcam.
Yes. Very cool. Now, I have seen that, I must say.
Yeah.
And it's Iceland the country.
Iceland the country, yeah. Okay. I don't know if it's still there, actually, but it was in a hotel. It was like, even if you weren't staying in a hotel, you could just go, because I think it was in the lobby, and you could just sort of see this Big Mac.
Wow.
It was under like a glass thing, a glass container.
They should just leave it in one of the bedrooms. And then everyone who gets that room goes in and goes, sorry, the cleaner hasn't been in.
There seems to be a perfectly good Big Mac here. I mean, half of a perfectly good Big Mac. Yeah, I mean, how desperate would you have to be after a night out to look at that and go, oh, it's probably still okay.
I'd have to have had at least 2 drinks.
It would be you, though, of us four. It would 100%. Do you remember when we did our live tour, mm-hmm. I had, as a Hall of Famer, come onto the stage, the man who decided to live stream a random puddle that had appeared in the road.
Mr. Puddle.
And I remember on the day watching it myself, you know, we were just watching a random person not realize how big the puddle was and either get into it or... This was wild.
Yeah.
The wild of live streaming.
That was the level of celebrity we had on our live shows. So bad luck if you missed it.
Okay. This next fact is under the custodianship of Callan. C-A-L-I-N. Callan, your fact is that in 1851, Prince Albert commissioned a ballroom for Balmoral Castle made entirely of corrugated iron. And I remember this episode so well because John Lloyd was on the show.
Yeah.
And he got so into corrugated iron.
He hasn't stopped talking about it since.
Oh my God. It was like he just like managed to get almost everything in the universe and then pulled it round to corrugated iron. He's like, did you know the shape of the universe must be a bit like corrugated iron because of the stiffness of it? And it's like, oh my God.
I feel like I remember the thunk of his research notes hitting the table. It was such a thick wad. Was that John's first ever show?
I think it was, actually.
I think that might have been.
No, it wasn't. He was in the one, he was in a football special.
You're right.
Before that.
You're right. Yes.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it was like miraculous theorem or something. That if you get something flat, like a piece of paper, if you hold it at the end, it kind of flops down. Mm-hmm. But if you bend it into a U shape, it stays stiff. Mm-hmm. And it's basically why if you fold pizza, it won't flop over before it goes in your mouth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I literally tell my daughter that fact every single Sunday when we buy her a pizza at the farmer's market. Ah. And I say, did you know that if you fold it here, it'll make it stiffer?
Yeah.
Again, you've changed, man, buying pizza at the farmer's market. What's wrong with Pizza Hut?
I have changed in that sense, but I haven't changed in the sense that I'm extremely tedious about my facts to people.
Anna?
Yeah, this one's from Brian Hess. No relation to other Hesses you might know. As far as we know, no. And here's a fact for you, Brian. During the 19th century, Sadler's Wells Theatre in London was routinely flooded to stage fake naval battles.
So good.
Yeah, these were incredible. Theatre used to be more fun. You went and you were told you had to wear your swimming stuff when you bought the ticket and you
really?
Came.
Really? I forget that detail.
No, oh, God,
sorry. It could be immersive.
It could be literally immersive. Yeah. They also had horses as well on stage, didn't they? That's another thing I remember.
Running on treadmills.
Yeah.
Out towards you, which is what an illusion of scariness that you would have. It's like a 3D movie.
I would argue it's not really an illusion of scariness. It's just scary.
Yeah. It is scary. Here's another one now for Adrian Carter. Adrian Carter, your fact is that the practice of dog owners pretending they haven't seen their dog having a poo is technically known as strategic non-knowledge.
That's fantastic.
Whose fact was that?
Yeah, that's Andy's.
Great. I like the technically. Well, I'd forgotten that fact, but in what official dictionary? Which experts?
There must be a paper about it, right?
There must be.
Andy's not made that up.
No, exactly. Andy wouldn't do something like that.
Oh, no. I don't know. Technically is doing a lot of work there, I think, in an Andy fact.
Yeah,
that's true.
There's technically a giant kettle called Jenny. It's just a big building that heats water. That's not a kettle, mate.
Yeah, he plays it fast and loose.
Hey, you know when I wasn't on the show last week?
Yeah.
Were you slagging me off in the same way that you're slagging Andy off here? Is that what's going on here?
No, but you weren't trying to get off with my sister in emails.
Okay, is it my turn?
Yes. Yeah.
Then this fact now goes out to Amanda. And Amanda, your fact is that instead of being one of the founders of the USA, Benjamin Franklin almost stayed in Britain to found a swimming school on the Thames.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, this is a cracker. He spent some time wandering London, got really into swimming.
He did.
It was. I think I remember the location where it was, not from the time. From reading
Thames.
About it, yeah.
Was it near his house? Because his house was quite near the old QI office, wasn't
it?
It was
right.
Near Embankment, so yeah.
It's still it's a museum now, so you can go. You can find it with a blue plaque on the outside, but you can actually go inside, and it's
cool. Oh, you wouldn't want to swim in the Thames there now. Because it's too fast flowing. Whereas it's probably cleaner than it was then, I reckon, because the Thames has improved quite a lot in cleanliness over the years.
Right.
But they put in extra bridges, which makes the water flow quicker. Because there's like the arches that the water has to kind of squeeze through.
So now it's like doing wild water rapids.
Well, compared to in those days, yeah.
Yeah.
Like if Benjamin Franklin jumped in the Thames now, you'd have to fish him out in Fulham or something. Is that the way it goes?
Yep, you've done that right. God, it's actually, I'm actually spending so long working this out. But
when you and I rowed on the Thames, Anna, and they were teaching us how to do it, and you would have to go, you'd be next to this factory or something, and you'd have to like row for half a mile or something, whatever it was. And you row to the other end, and then they're explaining to you like, okay, this is what you did, this is what you have to improve, okay. And then when you turn around, you're exactly back where you started.
Yeah, it's tough.
Because the water's just taking you all the way back there. And you're like, the amount of effort I put in to get to that point, and now I'm back where I started.
And that's why in the Olympics, they never stop to have chats, do they? Halfway through, they never go, oh, let's have a team talk, heads together.
Although, do you remember there was one rower in the early days, I'm not sure if it was Olympics, but there was a race where he was winning by so much, there was some ducks went past and he could stop and let the ducks cross the river and then carried on going and still won the race.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I, having mentioned John Lloyd earlier, I once was having a coffee with John and we were sitting and the view was the Thames and we were mid-chat and he suddenly just went, oh, look, it's Bill Bailey. And I looked out and on a paddleboard standing in the Thames was Bill just waving at us, going, hi, John, hi, Dan.
That's odd. But feels in keeping with who he is.
That's amazing. He must have been there every day for like 6 years hoping that John Lloyd would turn up.
I think
Fulham is the wrong way, isn't it?
Is it?
Because Fulham, you'd have to be going west, wouldn't
don't
you?
Don't write in.
Please don't write in.
All right, let's have one more. This is a fact for Edelith. Okay. Edelith, your fact is sumo wrestling referees carry a knife so that if they make a bad decision during a match, they can kill themselves.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? I think that was one of my facts. And I
think they don't do it anymore.
Yeah, right.
I think.
I don't think there have been any modern fatalities anyway. No. It's probably more ceremonial as a concept, right? Sumo wrestlers and Benjamin Franklin, I feel like those were two quite heavy friends of the podcast that we've not
literally heavy because that's
very funny.
True, yes, we used to do sumos a fair chunk, I think, back in the day. And Franklin,
yeah,
we need to bring him back.
Oh, he's a rich vein, Franklin. It's weird that we raise sumo wrestlers so much. That feels like your influence.
Yeah,
I've, thrusting them in.
We of course only record one of these every week, which we do about 10 minutes before it goes out. So not to break the illusion, but I have a feeling looking at my notes, there might be a sumo wrestler fact in next week's show. Oh. When we record next week, of course.
Wow, really?
Is it that Benjamin Franklin was once a sumo wrestler?
It's not. Right, you might also find, I have a feeling that Andy might be away next week as well.
Long old holiday, isn't it?
Yeah, well, okay, what a great tease to end the show on. Tune into next week's Little Fish to hear about sumo wrestlers. Well done to everyone who is now a custodian of one of our facts. That is Edelith, Amanda, Adrian, Brian, Kaylin, Gergo, Mike, and Krista. And if you want to have your fact featured on the show, podcast@qi.com, send them in. Andy goes through the emails, he picks out the ones most relevant to him and his life and his interests, and he hands them to us to read out. And so, yeah, do send them. We love reading them out. And if you do want your own fact to be a custodian of, you just have to go to patreon.com/clubfish and join the highest tier, friend of the podcast. There's a lot of great other things that we do in Clubfish, so do check it out generally. Otherwise, come back on Friday for Big Fish. We'll see you then. And until then, from me, Anna, and James, it's goodbye.